You're listening to a Sun Life podcast. We pray you'll be blessed with the teaching of God's word. For more sermons, visit sunlife.org.au.
Good morning. It actually is, I love the opportunity to come and speak. And I still get to do that quite a lot, even though I mainly work, as been said, in the international development community these days, which is a far cry in many respects from what I used to do in church work. But sometimes, in some ways, it's just more of the same, isn't it, to a different group of people. When I actually grew up in church, and I was a I only lived 5 minutes away in West Leederville, actually, so it was easy for me to come this morning. And I remember the current Luna Cinema in Leederville used to be our church building. Back when I was a girl of about 8 or 9 years old, which is kind of strange how these things happen. It doesn't look like that anymore. But when I grew up in church, women didn't have much of any roles in church. I loved seeing a drummer today, because the roles I remember we could have in church were we could be the secretary or the singer. I mainly play the piano, or else we worked with children. But aside from that, there was no women involved in church world. So when I grew up in the church, it was kind of like I never felt like, oh, I would ever really get involved. And in fact, that led me to really becoming quite distant from the church in my teens, and going off into university and really heading on a different direction. Until as a woman of about maybe in my early 20s, and about two things happened. One thing happened was that God miraculously intervened in my world, sitting in a car park at UWA. And I don't know, I think it must have been my mother put a book in the glove box, Love, Acceptance, Forgiveness. And I was desperate one day for a bit of reading and waiting for an exam, I think. And I reached across and took this book out and started reading it, and got introduced to what I suddenly saw the church was, a place of love, acceptance, forgiveness. And even though I had a beautiful church in many respects, it hadn't been my experience. But when I read that book, I read the first story, I burst into tears in the car, I cried my eyes out, I had this amazing sense of God's presence in the car and Him saying, I'm the one who called you. And this it's kind of complete transition in my life. And then I happened to go to Riverview in its early formation, which was called Inner City Faith Fellowship, and I saw a woman preaching. It was Val Baker. I don't know if you know Val Baker. She is the original founder, her and her husband. And I went, a woman? That's not my experience either. I thought, oh, I'd quite like to do that. And all these years on, I get that wonderful opportunity. So I'm very, very blessed to be here. I am a mum. I'm a mum to three adult sons. My boys are 28, almost 22 and 19. Oh, and I woke up this morning and none of them were home. Where's those days gone? When they ran and jumped into bed with me and on this day wanted to make me breakfast. They didn't even come home. No, my older son's married and my two younger sons are away. They have given me in the last week, may I say, my older son gave me a grandson. How is that? I had to throw my picture up, seeing I saw all these other baby pictures up. That's my little new little boy. His name's Oscar and he's a week old. He was only born the day that I left to fly out overseas, and I just saw him for a little while, and then I saw him last night when I just came home, which is delightful. And I obviously am a mother to a daughter-in-law as well. I'm a mum. I mean, I've already said that, of course. May I also say, I feel like I'm a mother to the women I serve overseas. I'm kind of like a generation older than them, and I feel like I'm their mum. And it's kind of one of my great delights that I get to be mother and grandfather and grandmother to communities, to full communities in the overseas world. It's wonderful. I'm a minister. I'm a wife. I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. I'm a friend. Gosh, you get to be so many things as you get older, and as a woman, you get to embrace all of them. and I'm an international development worker, and this has become my great passion since I left Riverview in 2013 and started the Foxglove Project, which is something I absolutely love. And today, you know, I was just been in Hong Kong. That's where I've been for an international development conference, and I was speaking at that conference. And at the end of the conference, they did what was called a simulation exercise. Have you ever taken part in one of those? You know, when you get kind of, they immerse you into a situation and you get to experience it like you're one of the people in that setting. And the one that I did was through a group called Crossroads International, and it was a simulation exercise about being in poverty. And they put us into a room, maybe much like this, but it was just a concrete floor that we sat on. And at one point in the exercise, they moved us to pieces of plastic 2 metres by 2 metres, which is the average size of a slum home in the developing world. And on that piece of 2 metres by 2 metres, there were 7 of us representing an average family. So an average family would sleep and feed and perhaps do their basic work in a 2 metre by 2 metre square, which is hard for us to get our heads around, isn't it? So the 7 of us were put onto this mat. And then they explained to us the cost of living on that mat. And then they explained to us, you have to make these paper bags for the next 2 hours. I'm telling you, I'm still suffering. My legs are still hurting because I had to bend over. I didn't realise how hard it would be. And my backside's still hurting because of the concrete floor. I'm a bit of a wreck. But for 2 hours, we had to make paper bags that we then tried to sell to people who decided they weren't good enough and ripped them up, or gave us a terrible price, or at the end of every week where we had to go and pay the guy for the place, we were always short. And I had this most overwhelming experience of what it must be like and how loud poverty is. It's loud. It's a loud voice, because everything in your head is saying survive, 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 and every other voice which is trying to speak to you, you don't hear it. In fact, I know this because as I was sitting there making my paper bags frantically, they tell me that people were walking around yelling, there's a charity here and that charity will help you feed your children. There's a charity over there and right now they will help you give your children education. There's a charity here. They said they yelled that, and I'm telling you, I didn't hear them. I did not hear. At the end of that experience, I felt a little bit overwhelmed. I thought, I don't even realise how loud that voice was, even though I've been doing this work for a long time. It was a simple exercise, but gosh, it was powerful, and it made me feel like I should get someone else to do the things I do, someone who's more capable and more experienced and wealthier and more merciful and more patient. Have you ever felt like that? That what you're being asked to do, you're just not up for it. I think that that's exactly what God does for each of us. He calls us to live lives that are so much more expansive than we think we're capable of. He honestly does. I think there's no merit at all in living small. I don't. Because what I've come to understand is that when I live small, when I just think this is all I can do, I just give no credit at all to the fact that God is supposed to live in me. Please. We make all of these declarations like, I hope I can be this honest, you know, that God is, you know, that God is huge and God is capable and God lives in me and, you know, God is for me and not against me, and if he's for me, I can do anything. And then we go back to living little contained lives based on what you and I think we can already do. And it's true. And if we as the church rose up and lived like God was who he says he is inside of us, and do not tell me that the church wouldn't be incredibly impacting in our world. Yeah. And I'm not talking about the developing world, I'm talking about in Perth and in Australia. Yet too often, we live within our own abilities. And I'm so reminded of that in this story, that is probably one of my most surprising stories of Scripture. It's probably the most simple story of Scripture, but gosh, it surprises me whenever I read it. It's about Jesus right at the beginning of his ministry, and he was yet to really record doing anything of great significance. I'm sure he was known in the community for the way these men responded, but we certainly hadn't heard much about him when he's walking along the Sea of Galilee and he sees fishermen. Do you remember this? Let's read it together. He's walking along the beach of Galilee. Jesus sees two brothers. He sees Simon, who are later called Peter. He sees Andrew. And they're fishing. They're throwing their nets into the lake. They're capable men. It was their regular work. And Jesus says to them, "Come with me, and I'll make a new kind of fisherman out of you. I'll show you how to catch men and women instead of perch and bass." And they didn't ask questions. They simply dropped their nets and they followed him. And a short distance down the beach, they came upon another pair of brothers, James and John, Zebedee's sons. And these two were sitting in a boat with their father Zebedee, mending their fish nets. And Jesus makes them the same offer, and they were just as quick to follow, abandoning their boat and their father. This is the record of Jesus calling the first disciples. The people he has decided are going to help him revolutionize the whole world with the message of Christ. The message of his death, which is yet to come. The message of his resurrection. The message that God is for us, not against us. The message that God came for every single person. He loves us dearly, and he would sacrifice even his own son that we could be with him. And he chooses a bunch of fishermen. I think Jesus was absolutely nutty. I can understand him having God having to use Adam and Eve because that's all he had. But here's Jesus with the greatest mission, a mission that ended up turning the whole world on its head, a mission that ended up defining time. And he starts it with fishermen. Don't you find that extraordinary? Don't you find that completely unlike what you and I are like? You know, the first thing that surprises me about this story is the fact that Jesus, the authority of Jesus. Like, that's surprising, isn't it? Because Jesus, these men are with their nets. They're with what they have done their whole lives. They are with their father, and this is the only world they have ever known. And a man walks by who maybe they have heard about in the local village, and he's been teaching a bit in the temple, or they must have heard of him. But all he had to do was say to them, "Come follow me," and they abandoned everything and followed him. Yeah. I wonder if you and I would be so quick to act. I wonder if you and I are so quick to act, because he calls us all the time. And I don't know about you, but I say, "Oh, look, Lord, I'm not up for that. Oh, you know, God, we just wait. I've got to make sure I pay off my mortgage first. Oh, God, wait, I've got my two kids in school, and I've got this going, I've got that going on." As if God hasn't thought that through. It's such an amazing thing. But, you know, I reckon one reason why they didn't hesitate, because there's something in you and I that does want to be called. Isn't there? Like, I remember being a girl and sitting in church, and there'd be ministers who would come who'd often do like a word of knowledge. You know that in church life when that can happen. And, you know, I remember kind of wanting to make sure they chose me, or hoping they would. Has anyone felt like that? Or am I the only terribly, terribly kind of basic human being? But it was something about being seen that was really, you wanted it. Like, pick me. And here's Jesus walking along the shore, and he says, "I pick you." Oh, golly. Those men's hearts must have jumped. But the second thing I love about this story is the fact that God sees the capacity in people. Doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like, Jesus didn't pick them randomly. He picked them because he saw what was in them. No one else had seen it yet. They were the sons of Zebedee. They were the fisherman boys. No, you're not going to ask them to come to the temple. Just let them get above their fishing. But Jesus isn't like that. God is not like that. We're so quick to see the outside. And he's so quick to see what's in us. You know, if I was looking for a group of people to change the whole world, I don't think I'd be looking for the fishermen. What kind of people would you be looking for? Who would make your shortlist? What kind of people would make your shortlist? What kind of qualities would they have for you to think, this is the group I'm going to identify to change the whole world? Tell me. Call out.
Doctors.
Yeah, okay, doctors. I think, oh yeah, because you know why we'd think them? I'm sure there's a few doctors here too, isn't there? I think we choose them because of a bit of status. Maybe intelligence. Okay, what other kinds of people? What other qualities would they have that you would think, yes, that's the kind of quality I want? Come on.
Competence?
Okay, so competence, where we want some people who are very skillful. What kind of skills would you like them to have?
Pardon?
What kind of skills?
People skills,
well, maybe because you need them to do lots of networking. So let's get some good people skills. What other kind of people would we want?
Bill Gates.
What kind of people?
Bill Gates.
What do we like about him? He's got some financial nous. We'd like to have some financial people on our team who could fund this exercise of changing the world. What other kind of people would we like? I think we'd like some good public speakers. We need a good rounded team. So let's have some public speakers who can go out and put them in. I think we'd need a really good promo marketing team. Perhaps in this digital age, we'd really need some media people who could produce this message. You know, I'm not minimising the place of strategy. I'm not. But I am maximising the place of heart. And saying, God looks there, and then he looks beyond. Jesus chooses fishermen and says, come with me, because I choose you. You know, I have three sons. And one of my sons, my middle son's name is Hamish. And Hamish is now about 22. So he's getting to be a big boy. But when he was a little boy, that's him in the middle. He's pretty lovely, isn't he? That's my three. This is my three about, 10 years ago. Zachariah is my baby, Hamish, and Ty, who's just become dad. This is my sons. And Hamish was one of those students at school who was really capable. Well, actually, he wasn't that capable at school, but I knew he was smart. Has anyone had a son like that? He's really smart, but no one else knows it. Has anyone had those kind of sons? I don't know what happens, Hamish, but you're so capable, but no one else gets to see it because it's only experienced in this home. And he'd go along to school, and he never did. He was a middle student, middle to lower middle. You know, and he would fall over the line at many of his classes. And I'd be thinking, how is this incredibly smart, bright student not doing so well? And largely it was because he just never wanted to put his head up above the radar. He just wanted to be under the radar. He didn't want to be noticed. He didn't want to be too good at anything. He just wanted everyone to just think he was just in the pack. So I turn up at one of those parents' nights when he was in year 9, and I go and see his English teacher. He's getting like 50 in English, you know. And I go to see his English teacher, and his English teacher, Mr. Pasquier, looks at me and says those dreaded words. What are those dreaded words, parents? Mothers, what is that dreaded word? Potential. I see that your son has potential. And I looked at him and I said, I don't want to hear that word anymore. I want to see a bit of action. I don't want to hear about potential. I want to see a bit of delivering of that potential, Mr. Pasquier. And Mr. Pasquier is looking at me like, oh gosh, she's a bit of a hardcore woman, isn't she? But I said, I've lived with this for 14 years and I want to see some outcomes. So he looks at me and he says, I reckon your son's capable of greatness in this. And I'm looking at him like, oh please, let's just get him past 55%. And he says to me, I commit this year to getting the best out of your son. And I said, well, welcome to my world. Mr. Pasquier invested into Hamish that year like I couldn't believe. And look, it wasn't because he gave him time. It's because he gave him belief. I reckon within 1 week, Hamish had got a 60 in English. And over that year, we just kept growing and growing and growing. And Hamish would come home and he'd just say, oh, Mum, I love this. I've got this great thought about English. And he'd be having this conversation with me. And I'm thinking, what is happening? We went from a D to a C to a B to an A. He got Mr. Pasquier again in year 10 because Mr. Pasquier asked for him. By the end of year 10, Hamish won the English prize for all the students in his year English group. By the time we got to year 12, Hamish won the prize for the best essay writer in the school. He won the politics and history, politics and law prize, and he won the philosophy and ethics prize. All for essay writing. And at the end of that year, the school gave a medallion to each student. And he hadn't seen Mr. Pasquier for 2 years because he left the school at the end of year 10. And at the end of year 12, they give him a medal to say, give that to the person who's had the greatest influence on your life as a student. Mm. And who do you think he gave that to?
Yeah.
Mr. Pasquier. And I remember him saying to me, Mum, he believed. He saw something in me. I was so touched and I was so challenged. I was so challenged because I thought to myself, maybe I lost a little of that belief. Mm. But you know what? Jesus never loses faith in it.
Yeah.
He never loses faith in it. He just keeps seeing it in you and me. He just keeps saying, I believe you've got greatness in you. Not greatness in the way other people see it. It's not a greatness to be a famous person. Who cares about that? It's the greatness to be all that you were made to be. It's the greatness to live out what your core was. I want to do that, don't you? I don't really care about fame. I don't care about fortune. They are such fleeting things. They are so fleeting. They come and they go. My dad was this most fabulous man. I grew up with a man of incredible vision. And you know, we had times in our family where we just financially looked like we were hitting the jackpot. Back in 1969, Perth wasn't it is now. And I remember we had this magnificent home in City Beach and we had two cars that had air conditioning and electric windows. In 1969, that was something. And he was into land development and all this stuff. And then one day we went broke. We lost everything. And we were living in a house in Morley and we had no car and we had this no electricity. So we had a generator in the backyard with petrol in it so we could have electricity in the house. I still thought I was the richest woman in the world. Because my dad used to say to us, don't even think about money. There's plenty more where that came from. He never ever saw wealth. He never saw status. He never saw stuff as an indicator of your greatness. He always saw taking a chance, having a go, living out what God's called for you. That's your greatness. But the third thing I always find remarkable about that story, and it tells me about what we're all like, is this. People find courage when others believe. People find courage when others believe. Hamish found courage when Mr. Pasquier believed. Like, he couldn't rely on Mr. Pasquier to do it for him. But he found the courage because he believed. The disciples are thinking, we're just fishermen. Are you kidding me? Who do you think in this community is going to listen? Which in the learned community, who is going to listen to the local fisherman, Jesus? I mean, don't you think they were thinking that? I mean, they must have been thinking, okay, look, we're with him. That's good. But then at some point, we've got to step forward. That's bad. Like they knew in themselves they didn't have the capacity. But they just imagined, maybe. And with that, they left everything to follow him. You know what? It does take enormous courage to not live within the lines. It really does. But what's the real risk other than a failure or two? I watched on the way home in the plane, actually, I watched The Darkest Hour, Winston Churchill movie. Remember, have anyone seen that movie? Should see it. It was great. But one of my favourite quotes is Winston Churchill. And he says this. He says, success, I think he says, is going from one failure to the next without losing enthusiasm. Wow. I love it. Success is going from one failure to the next without losing enthusiasm. I want to live like that. Oh, another failure. Don't worry about it. I'm going to have another go. Oh, another failure. Don't worry about it. I'm going to have another go. But I think you can start to have that kind of courage when other people believe in you. You only need one or two to keep saying, you're all right, you can do it. And somehow you find it. You know, one thing that I'm passionately involved in the third world is women's self-help groups. It brings together 20 women who are the poorest women in a community. The women who I work with a lot are in Rwanda, which is a country in Africa, Central Eastern Africa. And in that country, we've funded nearly 6,500 women into these groups. And when they join a group, they join for their life. We can't get people to join for an alpha course, you know what I mean? And there they join a group for the rest of their life. So 20 women, and these women are women living out, they would be on the edges of the community. They are completely rejected. No one in the community accepts them. They would live isolated. They don't even have friends with each other because they're so deeply ashamed because they're filthy and they're poor and they cannot feed their children. They will beg for one meal a day. They do not send their children to school. They do not wash. They are not literate. They're not acceptable. And they live on the fringes of the communities where people do not know their name. But in this project, the organisation, which is a fantastic Indigenous Rwandese Christian organisation, sends people out to those individual women and says, come and join a self-help group. And you have to send people out because, first of all, you can't advertise because they're not literate. But secondly, you can't advertise because they would not think you meant them. But someone goes to their home, two people at a time, and they say, come join a self-help group. And in that self-help group, we're going to teach you all of these basic skills about health and hygiene and conflict resolution and entrepreneurship and bookkeeping and literacy, and you are going to save enough money to start your own business. Well, do you think those women believe that when someone says it to them? Do you think anyone believes that? I wouldn't believe that. And those top women, when I hear that story, they always say, the women will say to me that they said to the person who came, you are making a mistake. You have come to the wrong woman. And many of the women say they'll have to come back to their house two and three times before they'll even go to the village meeting. Because they think, you're looking at the wrong people. I haven't got that capacity. But you know, they keep going back. Till the women agree to come. And you know, I see this movement just completely transforming their lives. Absolutely amazing what can happen. But I remember one lady who told me one of my early stories, and she was a mum of about six children. She was my age. She was my age. I was then in my mid-50s. She's in her mid-50s. And she says to me, I have six children. I lived on the edges of this community. She said, and I was an alcoholic. My husband and I were both serious alcoholics, just from banana beer, you know, just a really cheap beer you can make from leftovers in the field. She said, I didn't feed my children and none of my children went to school. We had no health cover, so if my child was sick, I couldn't take them to the doctor. I just waited and hoped that they would survive. I had no friends in the community, and then one day these two people came to my house and asked me to come to a community meeting. So she says, I said to them, you have made a terrible mistake in choosing me because I have nothing. And they said, you're just the kind of woman we're looking for. So she says, I went along with that invitation. I joined a group. And she says, for 6 months I survived. No one gave me anything except they gave me training. Well, this is her beforehand. Oh, no, this was on her. This was one of the other women in the group. But their before photo just shows that it's tragic. But she said, they started to give me training. They started to give me training in what it means to run a small business, in health and in hygiene. They started to talk to about conflict resolution, and she said, you know what happened? I started to think differently. I started to see myself differently. Every week, she said, I made a tiny little savings to the group because you can't join a group without making it. And she said, when they first say you've got to make a savings, she said, I have no money. And they asked for 50 Rwandan francs, which is about 8 cents that I save. She said, I couldn't save 8 cents. But one of the other women said to me, come on, we'll go and work in a field and get some sugar cane and sell at the market and then we'll have our 8 cents. She said, I started putting in that 8 cents every week. Every week they would do training for 1 hour. She says, my mind started to change and change and change. She said, at the end of that 6 months, then they said to us, now you can take out a loan from the group for the money you have put into the group. She said, I was terrified. I took out a loan for 1,000 Rwandan francs, which is the equivalent of $1.50. She said, and when I took that loan, I went to the local farm and I bought avocados, half a dozen avocados. And I walked to the market and I put down my piece of material, I put my avocados on it. And within a very short space of time, I had sold them all for 1,500 Rwandan francs. I'd made a 50% profit, and that was the day I believed. 3 years later, when I met her, she still has her stall every week where she sells her avocados and her tomatoes, but next door she's opened up another stall where she sells secondhand clothes. And she looked at me and she says, I'm a businesswoman of Gisenyi. I mean, it's just so wonderful how much life changes. I see their lives after such a short time. Because when other people have believed, they find the courage to believe as well. I find it so actually overwhelmingly beautiful of what can happen. I remember when I did my thesis on these groups, because when I first saw it, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe this could be possible. I thought, this must be another little story. So I did a 3 years master's thesis dissertation on the self-help groups, and I researched and followed groups for 3 years. And I never met a group where a woman left. And I never met a group where a woman's life didn't radically change. And at the end of that 3 years, when I was meeting with one of my groups of women, I said, tell me one thing that you think I should know before I finish off my writing. Just tell me one thing you want to leave me with. And one of the young women, she was only in her 20s, she jumped to her feet, and through the interpreter she says to me, never again will we make room for poverty in our lives. I thought, boy, that sounds pretty good. I'm trying to write it down. I thought, well, I've forgotten that. So I said to the interpreter, can you get her to say it again if she remembers it? Just say it word for word, please. And I'm writing down my notes, and she says something to him, and he says to me, she doesn't need to remember it, she believes it. People believe. People start to believe because someone else sees it in them. People start to have the kind of courage that you and I so long to have for ourselves. You know, this narrative of this story from Matthew, it's not just a story about Jesus. It's an object lesson for you and me. It's an object lesson. It's Jesus teaching us something. You know, we recognize that when Jesus gives that call that people are waiting to see capacity, but it's actually calling you and I to do that for other people. Are you and I seeing the capacity in others and calling it out? I just want to see it in every one of those women in the developing world. I just want to go up to them each time and just say, I know what you're capable of. You don't yet know it, but I see it and I believe it. I was in Rwanda only last September, and this young woman had a baby in her arms, and she was 19 and she was alone. She was living out under the banana trees, and they were trying to get her to join a self-help group. It was the first day when they were just starting these groups. And it was all Rwandese and me, so she kind of went, oh, I know who to go to. I see this Western woman over there. So she runs over to me at some point and she says, through the interpreter, if you give me the money for the savings every week, which remember is 8 cents times 6 months, 8 cents is $1.80. If you give me that money, then I can join a group. Now, do you not think I wanted to give her that money? Who thinks they would have wanted to give that money? Please. $2. But you know what? I said, I will never give you that money. And I will never give you food. Because I said, I will not rob from you the chance for you to know that you can do this yourself. Not only will I not rob it from you, I'm coming back next year and I promise you I'll tell your story. Because I said, once you do it for yourself, no one can take it from you. Yeah. When you do it for yourself, no one can say to you that they made it happen. You know what? She looked at me and tears started running down her face because she's thinking, I can't join the group, what will I do? But other women started saying to her, who are just as poor as her, we'll do it together. We'll each go and work in the fields. We'll save the money. You can do it. You can do it. And with that, she ran back and she joined the group. And I don't even know the story yet. But I believe. I totally believe. But we're called to do that for other people. If we don't look around this room and see people who can do stuff, and if we don't call it out of them and we're just also prepared to live our singular little lives, then so many people will just die never really having a go. We've got to look for the capacity in others and not be so happy to see their frailties. I've got heaps of frailties. If my friends only saw my frailties, I would be a very beaten woman. But they choose to see the other stuff I have in me, and not just to see it, but they invest into it. They say, Kelly, I'm going to help you everything that we've got. You know, we need to do this even when it seems confusing, unlikely, or even unbelievable. Even unbelievable. Believe in people. You know, I was meeting with a group of women out in an open field. Picture before this, please, guys. And I was giving them, I turned up at an event and somehow, there's a lot of Christianity, the church is the primary social network in Rwanda. So a lot of the people are Christian, huge numbers. But because they're illiterate and because they're quite outcast, as you can imagine, they very few of them would go to church. But they would see themselves as Christians in faith, you know. And I get up with this group of women and somehow I arrived and they said, oh, you're teaching today. And I was like, what do you mean I'm teaching? Oh, yes, well, you've got the whole morning to teach them something. I'm thinking, I don't know how this happened, but I'll have a go. So what I got out was I got out the book, because they were largely their agricultural is their way that they earn a living. And I said to this group of women, okay, we're going to talk about the principle of sowing and reaping. Galatians 5, yeah? So I said, oh, what I'd like you to do is, you've got enough people here, they had a couple of people there who are literate, and we had a few versions. So I said, I'd like you to go and read the section of scripture, talk about it in your groups, then we'll come back and talk about it together. And I thought to myself, well, then I'll do the teaching. You know what I mean? Once they've got a bit of a grasp of what this concept is. So off they go into their groups and they're talking. I don't know. I think I was trying to get them back about 45 minutes later because they were just giving each other their thoughts and ideas, and it was expanding. And when they came back, I had a bit of paper and I said, oh, tell me what your thoughts were. Well, they basically told me back my whole message. I hadn't even told them one thing. But them just talking about those concepts of Galatians, they were saying things to me like, well, you know, you can't reap where you haven't sown, and you have to reap, and sometimes it takes a time to be seen. And they're giving, anyway, at the end of it, I'm thinking, oh, I was pretty useless in this, because, in fact, they've grasped it all themselves. So it was this wonderful opportunity for them to actually learn from their own rather than actually have someone else tell them. And that's what most of us are like, isn't it? Just give me the information, let God speak to me. And amazingly, he does. So at the end of this, they were having a bit of a sing-along and a bit of a chatting at the end. And a number of the women were coming and going, so I wasn't really taking any notice of that. One of the young women left. Then she came back and she sat next to me. And then she looks over at me and she gets my hand. She puts into my hand 500 Rwandan francs, which is like a dollar. And if you think about it, the poorest people earn 67 US dollars a year. This was a lot of money, right? And I'm looking, I can feel my eyes just about popping out of my head, like, please don't give me a dollar. Please do not give me a dollar. So she puts it into my hand, and through the interpreter she says, I'm sowing. Now, never in that whole thing had we talked about money. That had not been the point of the sowing and reaping. That hadn't been the examples, I should say. We'd been talking about all these other examples, but never money. She gives me this. I desperately wanted to give her that money back. Does anyone understand how you would feel? I do not need this 500 Rwandan francs. So I am having this internal struggle, like, please take back your 500 Rwandan francs, please. And then through the interpreter, she can see this struggle. She says to him, doesn't she really believe? And again, I felt incredibly confronted. Do I believe? Because if I believe in her and I believe in Scripture, then I believe that she'll be unbelievably blessed. But at that moment, all my humanity wanted to just settle for what looked like in front of me, a poor woman giving all she had. It reminded me of the woman at the temple giving those last bits, and us so much wanting to give it back to her. I took the money. I still have that note. I still carry it in my wallet. It reminds me I've got to see it in people. I've got to believe it in people. I've got to hold on to it in people, even when it's hard. You know, I think that this is all of our stories, isn't it? There's a God in heaven. There's a host of people on earth who know your capacity, believe in you. Whether you're a student, a wife, a teacher, a doctor, a salesperson, a small business owner, a mother, you have this kind of capacity. You have it. Jesus saw it. Probably my favourite story in the whole Bible is this woman at the well in John 4. And Jesus walks all night to reach the well because he knows she will be there. Do you know that story? Don't we? Read it. You've got to go and read it. I wasn't even going to say about it, but you've got to read it. John 4, it's like the most spectacular story. Because the Samaritan woman, first of all, the Samaritans were a mongrel race. Secondly, she was a woman who was very low in that society. And third, she was a woman of bad reputation. We're none of those. And Jesus travels all night for her at the well to draw water for him and for him to share with her the secrets of the kingdom. I'm going to share with you, he says, basically, the secret of the kingdom of living water. So spectacular. It's hard to even put into words what God sees in us. And it's hard to put into words how we so often just move on. We move on. But this is what God is like. Because straight up, very soon after this, he did the Sermon on the Mount. And I love this. God blesses those who are poor. And you know what poverty is? They realise their need for him. For the kingdom of heaven is theirs. And God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the whole earth. And God blesses those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied. And God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. And God blesses those who are pure of heart, for they will see God. And God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God. And God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses, God values, God even chooses people just like you and me, and our neighbours, and our families. We're his choice. You're his choice. He walks by the waters and he says to you, don't settle for your nets. I know that's within your capacity, but I am in you. At the end of every meeting with the individual women, I tell them of their great worth. And I tell them I'm going to go home to Australia and I'm not going to tell the sad stories. No. I promise them I'll tell stories of hope and strength and courage and achievement and faith. I'll tell stories that remind us that people are not to be judged by the colour of their skin, the elegance of their homes, the finery of their dress, the level of their education or the work they perform, but by the contents of their heart, the resilience of their spirit. And in these domains, I promise you, they're the richest of people. But may you and I believe the same for us. Let's not live small. We have the King of heaven, the Spirit of the living God residing in us. And if God be for me, who can be against me? And he declares, we are more than able, because it's Christ who strengthens us. Amen.